Baker McKenzie welcomes you to TMT Talk, the global TMT podcast series, focusing on sector-specific issues that are impactful on players in the technology, media, and telecoms industry.
Hello, and welcome to Baker McKenzie Global TMT podcast series. My name is Raffaele Giarda. I am a transactional partner with Baker McKenzie in Rome, and I have the privilege of leading the global technology, media, and telecoms industry group of the firm. Let me start by providing some background for this episode. This year, we launched the latest edition of our flagship publication called TMT Looking Ahead, where we present themes, discuss insights, and provide recommendations for the TMT sector in a five-part series. Now, we have recently published the report on tech mergers and acquisitions, which offers cross-practice and cross-regional perspectives around the drivers of the M&A activity in the tech space. Specifically, in this report, we did ask our experts to provide their insights on the tech M&A trends that we should be expecting in 2022 and beyond, the developments around special purposes acquisition companies, the so-called SPACs, the acquisition of intellectual property as a driver for tech M&A, or the new foreign direct investment regimes. And, as this will be the topic today, how a changing international tax landscape will have an impact on due diligence, deal structures, and post-acquisition integration planning in the tech M&A space. So, to this end, some of our most experienced colleagues in the TMT industry have kindly joined today, and therefore allow me to introduce Eric Christensen and Maria Antonia Athbathian. Eric Christensen is a Baker McKenzie partner based in San Francisco, who advises multinational corporations, both US and non-US based, on all aspects of the taxation of cross-border transactions and operations. Eric is also the liaison to the global tax practice for the technology, media, and telecoms industry group of Baker McKenzie. Maria Antonia Athbathian, also known as Tona, is a Baker McKenzie partner based in Madrid, whose practice focuses on dispute resolution matters, as well as on specific tax issues impacting particularly TMT companies, such as the digital services tax or specific reporting obligations. Tona is also the chair of the Baker McKenzie Tax Dispute Resolution Practice in EMEA.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for inviting me to be part of this conversation. Thank you, Raffaele.
Thank you, Tona.
Thank you, Raffaele. It is very nice to be here.
Thank you, Eric. So thank you, both of you, for joining. And let's get started with the first question. If we can commence by leveraging on your experience, Eric, can you tell us about the proliferation of unilateral measures, such as digital services taxes, and how these might impact the decision to pursue a deal, or might impact on the pricing or other significant terms and conditions of a given transaction?
Sure. Thanks, Raffaele. With regard to DST specifically, I think the important thing is that there's a slightly different approach to diligence. Unlike, say, corporate income tax or VAT diligence, DSTs will focus on, or diligence for DSTs should focus on, where the group as a whole has its customers, regardless of which entity in the group might be the seller. And then, once we've identified customer location, the task is to ask whether any of those countries might have a DST and whether the target has complied. It's important to recall that DSTs, like you say, Raffaele, are just one variety of unilateral measure. Unilateral measures are kind of interim taxes that tax policymakers and lawmakers have instituted, rather than waiting for the finalization of the OECD BEPS initiatives. And we've seen the enactment of these unilateral measures that go way beyond DSTs, including extraterritorial VATs and other devices to attack offshore selling structures. Here, the UK's diverted profits tax comes to mind, which has been mirrored in other places, including Australia. There's Australia's multinational anti-avoidance law. And there's also general anti-abuse rules that might apply more broadly. I think that the diligence for these types of taxes requires both a broader global perspective, but also a deeper dive. The diligence, it's difficult to assess whether any of these taxes might be applied to any given selling structure or operational structure. We've seen cases where companies might have an APA, an advanced pricing agreement, to cover transfer pricing, but that agreement doesn't necessarily cover these other types of unilateral measures or general anti-abuse rules. So you can get comfort on the transfer pricing front, but the potential for tax controversy persists both during and after the APA period. And then finally, just as a side note, there are new regimes coming on board all the time, as Tona can explain further, in the EU, such as the marketplace rules and ATAD 2 and ATAD 3. So to summarize, Rafaela, I think with the changing international landscape, it greatly complicates the diligence and requires a more thoughtful approach to diligence.
Thank you, Eric. This is really very interesting. Now, if I can turn to you, Tona, a Baker McKenzie survey of 1,200 multinational companies shows that M&A transactions have been identified as a major source of risk in audits for future years. So, from your perspective as a tax dispute lawyer, what is your view on this and on the possible disputes that could arise out of this particular factor?
Okay, so yeah, good question, Raffaele. So I think that there are many issues that you can consider here. But first of all, is that in some cases, because all this business transformation we are seeing within many groups, the acquisition respond to the need to acquire new technology or new markets or etc. So this means that some transactions should be made at a speed that does not allow a proper digestion of all the potential consequences as the ones that Eric mentioned. So I think that the problem here with M&A transactions or either acquisitions or even investments is that the way we approach due diligence, as Eric said, is not just complex regarding past liability, but what it's even more complex is trying to anticipate how this business is going to be taxed in the future in a moment where there are many uncertainties regarding international taxation. So if these companies will be impacted by and how for these different measures, probably we will talk later on about these changes in international rules, but also how the integration of this new business with your traditional or old business can create many areas of risk. And this can deal with, for example, including you need to decide how to accommodate your IP structure, your financing of the structure, or even if you apply different tax policies in areas where it's allowed to apply to different policies and you want to merge both businesses under the same rules, if this transition can create new risk, etc. Of course, famous exit taxes if in the integration phase. So I think that the problem is not just due diligence as we understood it in the past in terms of past liabilities and how to cover them, but it's just trying to anticipate how new rules that are not clear at all will impact the business.
Thank you, Tonya. It makes a whole lot of sense, and it's very compelling arguments. So very helpful. Thanks. Eric, returning to your experience, what about the so-called Pillar 1 and Pillar 2 initiatives of the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development? What would be the impact of those in your view?
Thanks, Raffaele. Yeah, it's the answer is it is still unknown. The pillars 1 and 2 still are not operational. We have model rules, but we don't have final rules. We have blueprints and we have statements of intent, and you know, in some level of detail, but we still don't have final framework for, you know, operationalizing these new regimes and how the tax is going to be split among, you know, the market countries under Pillar One, or how the top-up tax is going to be pushed down to constituent jurisdictions under Pillar Two. So this clearly isn't a question of diligence in planning for an M&A transaction, but I think it is a question how these new regimes will affect the deals and the quantification of the transaction benefit or the expected after-tax deal synergies. It's apparent, for example, that the global effective tax rate, both for the target group and for the acquiring group, are going to be impacted by Pillar 2. It's also apparent that the country-by-country results of the new combined group are going to be a necessary component in determining that global effective rate. But we don't have model rules, or we don't have final rules. We have model rules. And so there are lots of unanswered questions in this country-by-country approach. Things like utilization of existing tax attributes, including loss carryforwards, how to handle books tax differences, and how to handle consolidation. All of those really important questions have not yet been answered. So I think that the specter of Pillar 1, Pillar 2 should be complicating the expected tax benefit and the deal synergies. I think people that model the transaction benefit should be taking these things into account if they are not already.
Great, Eric. Thank you. This is really thought-provoking. Tona, any particular aspect or comment to add from your perspective on this?
Well, I think that probably I'm trying to leverage on Eric's comments. I think that indeed, I think that both companies and tax authorities are going to really struggle in the first years of application of all these final rules when finally approved, because our expectation is that they come into force shortly after we know the final rules. So probably with no time to digest them, to apply them, to get to final criteria by different tax authorities, and to be honest, those are very complex rules. So we can only expect disputes and uncertainties there. But additionally, something that sometimes people forget is that Pillar 1 and Pillar 2 will apply to the major groups, international groups, but not to all groups. So this means that for many years, we will have to apply two different set of rules depending on the company, the group turnover. And this will imply that also for the tax authorities, they will need to apply different set of rules, but probably with the same aim to get what they consider the fair taxation in their respective countries. So probably we will see, especially in the initial years, certain confusion about how to apply these rules, and also in the mind of the tax auditors how to get to equivalent result in cases of groups that are not directly subject to these rules, but trying to use general anti-abuse clauses or this kind of unilateral interpretation, unilateral rules that Eric mentioned at the beginning. So I think that probably we are moving in the right direction, but it does not mean that the way it's the path is going to be an easy one, especially not in the initial years of application.
Understood. Thank you very much, Donna. Eric, remaining focused one more second on a forward-looking perspective, what do you think would be the prospects for the U.S. tax reform, and what should deal makers be thinking about when considering those aspects?
Thanks, Raffaele. It's a great question. Biden's Build Back Better Act, that's Biden's tax reform, is in a precarious spot. The congressional midterm elections are fast approaching. And among observers in Washington, there's a consensus view that the last best chance to get tax reform done from a legislative perspective is to do so before the summer recess in advance of the congressional midterms. If that doesn't happen, that is passage of the Biden Build Back Better Act, in July, and there's a strong likelihood that it will not happen, we have the potential for a real clash of tax systems. On the one hand, you'd have the Trump-era TCJA, which, as you might recall, replaced the old so-called U.S. deferral regime, which was grounded in our Subpart F rules, with the new global intangible low-taxed income regime, GILTI, which effectively imposes tax annually on U.S. parented groups based on the worldwide income of the group. So on the one hand, you have the Trump-era GILTI regime, but on the other hand, you'd have Pillar 2, which imposes a global minimum tax on the consolidated income of the group, but with the important distinction that the question of whether the threshold minimum tax has been exceeded or not is done on a country-by-country basis. So you have kind of GILTI, which looks at the entire aggregate income in the offshore structure, and you'd have Pillar 2, which is very much a country-by-country focus. If Congress doesn't pass legislation to anticipate the operationalization of the new Pillar 2 regime, U.S. companies could have the worst of both worlds. That is, current U.S. taxation on the global GILTI income of the group, but at the same time, local country top-up taxes under Pillar 2, and with no U.S. foreign tax credit for the latter. So it's a fairly dire scenario, but again, going back to transaction benefit and quantifying after-tax deal synergies, I think those deal models should be taking this possible future into account. And maybe more importantly, for folks listening to this call, whoever it is at the company that's charged with post-acquisition integration should be thinking ahead to that possibility that a U.S. parented company in the very near future might be in this very disadvantageous position, unless planning steps begin now before the deal even closes. So not a sunny forecast, Raffaele, but I think it's one that our clients should be taking into account.
Thank you, Eric. Maybe not a sunny forecast, but at least we know if and to what extent we need to utilize the umbrella. So thank you for that. All right. So the time goes really fast. And as they say, it flies when you have fun, right? So we need to close. But before doing so, allow me to ask a closing remark to Donna. Donna, if we were to provide any recommendations on how to approach such deals in order to try to mitigate future risks, what would be your view?
Okay, very quickly, what a responsibility here. But I would say that taking into account that we live in a moment of uncertainty, but this does not mean that we can stop the deals. The deal has to be done, and the deals have to be done now. So I think that the point is first trying to approach this due diligence exercise in terms of anticipating how these new rules can impact the companies, but also the business you are acquiring, if so, or you are divesting, if so. But at the same time, trying to do it with a tax disputes mindset, in the sense of trying to prepare at the same time that the deal defense files, trying to document why you are doing what you are doing, what are the business reasons there, and trying to document that. This can be very relevant in terms of defense, what you are doing in the future, and trying to mitigate the risk of the tax authorities trying to challenge by using general anti-abuse clauses, for example. But this means contemporary documentation and probably involve the people dealing with the deal at this stage that maybe will not be in the company anymore when the audit comes. So, as I said, try to anticipate, try to be proactive, and prepare your defense file.
Makes perfect sense, Tona. Thank you so much. Well, this is all very helpful, Eric, Tona. What we can probably gather from this interesting conversation is that the evolving international tax landscape will require that additional due diligence be performed to evaluate compliance with a host of new obligations, keeping in mind that penalties for not doing so can be significant. For example, buyers will want to understand whether the targets have complied with their payment and reporting obligations, for example, with respect to the new digital services taxes that you have discussed today. So many thanks again for such an impressive discussion to Eric Christensen, Baker McKenzie TMT partner in San Francisco, and to Tona Afpeitia, Baker McKenzie TMT partner in Madrid. It was great having you both with us today, and thanks so much to our audience for listening to this conversation. Stay tuned for the next episode. Be well and keep safe. Arrivederci.
Thanks, Rampier.
Thank you. A pleasure, as always, talk to you.